You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores. This is my mea culpa.
This is Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa Podcast. Last week's commemoration of the January 6th attack on the Capitol made clear that the wound inflicted on this nation by Donald Trump and his MAGA brown shirts is still painfully raw. In fact, one could argue that things have gotten worse, much worse. While there isn't armed insurrection in the street, Trump has only strengthened his grip on the Republican Party to the point where he has become a cartoon despot.
Everything was going beautifully, and then the election got rigged and stolen from the American people. Anger over a rigged election that got that many people to go to D.C. A tiny percentage, and I mean tiny, like less than 1%, went to the Capitol.
We are drowning in lies and venom.
Love that day. There was so much love out there. During the speech.
For most of his first year in office, President Biden has bet that he could move the country past the divisiveness of his predecessor by restoring a sense of normalcy to the White House, practicing the traditional brand of politics he learned over decades in the Senate and as vice president, and largely ignoring the man he refers to as the former guy. He was fucking wrong. But finally, there was some relief and political payback. President Biden, after a year of ignoring Donald Trump, finally took off the fucking gloves and laid into his defeated opponent and drew blood. In a powerful speech at Statuary Hall last Wednesday, one of the very spots where a pro-Trump mob ran amok a year ago, Biden channeled the feelings of millions of Americans who have had fucking enough of Trump and the GOP's embrace of autocracy.
My fellow Americans, in life there's truth, and tragically there are lies. Lies conceived and spread for profit and power. We must be absolutely clear about what is true and what is a lie. And here's the truth. The former president of the United States of America has created and spread a web of lies about the 2020 election. He's done so because he values power over principle, because he sees his own interest as more important than his country's interest, than America's interest. And because his bruised ego matters more to him than our democracy or our Constitution. He can't accept he lost.
He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president. Defeated by a margin of over 7 million of your votes in a full and free and fair election. There is simply zero proof.
Biden's speech overshadowed what may have been the most consequential address of the day from Attorney General Merrick Garland, who in his understated and cerebral manner announced that the DOJ was coming not just for the rioters, but those who planned and financed the attack on the Capitol.
The Justice Department remains committed to holding all January 6 perpetrators at any level accountable under law, whether they were present that day or were otherwise criminally responsible for the assault on our democracy. We will follow the facts wherever they lead. We understand that there are questions about how long the investigation will take and about what exactly we are doing. As long as it takes, and whatever it takes for justice to be done consistent with the facts and the law.
This was less than assuring to those who demand swift accountability for the plotters of January 6th. Arizona Representative Ruben Gallego voices the frustration of many who find Garland both weak and ineffective.
The problem that we have right now is that we have a very obstructionist Republican Party that should be part of helping us decide how to save democracy instead of trying to cover up for their crimes. And you have, again, an attorney general who is, you know, feckless and has not been helpful in terms of preserving our democracy.
He said Garland's failure to decisively move forward with a January 6th investigation is posing issues in determining whether and who among former President Donald Trump's associates may have committed crimes through their potential involvement in the insurrection.
There's an ongoing slow coup by a bunch of Brooks Brothers dressed politicians. They're going to try to basically change the who counts the votes for the elections coming up in 2022 and 2024. So in some regards, yes, I think we're more resilient in case of a physical coup attack. But at the same time, the ongoing political coup is occurring. Now, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be holding more people accountable. I think Merrick Garland has been extremely weak. And I think there should be a lot more of the organizers of January 6th that should be arrested.
Gallego certainly isn't the only one feeling the rage. Several other Democrats and even federal judges have criticized Garland's Justice Department for its lax prosecutions of January 6th insurrectionists. No wonder parts of the public in the United States are confused about whether what happened on January 6th at the Capitol was simply a petty offense of trespassing with some disorderliness or shocking criminal conduct that represented a grave threat to our democratic norms, Chief U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell for the District of Columbia said during a court hearing in October. Gallego also warned that the conservative attacks on democracy are evolving.
I don't think the attack you're going to see in the future is going to be by a bunch of, you know, angry fat men trying to get into Congress. I think the actual attack is going to happen in the legislatures, in the county recorder's office, in the Board of Elections. There's an ongoing slow coup by a bunch of Brooks Brothers dressed politicians. They're going to try to basically change the who counts the votes for the elections coming up in 2022 and 2024.
But what does the path to prosecution for Donald Trump really look like? Is there truly a possibility that the former president's actions on and before January 6th could lead to a federal indictment? For many, this has become the shiny new object. But what is the political reality?
Waiting for Congress to make the referral before opening an investigation into the higher-ups. That's certainly better than, you know, I think the alternative that there isn't going to be an investigation, but it's not so great. I mean, here we are more than a year after now the attack, and memories fade, and Trump, of course, is good at delay and filing all sorts of bogus lawsuits. And so it's harder to conduct a law enforcement investigation at the Justice Department as time elapses.
I'm worried about our democracy, and I'm worried that you have a lot of people that are trying to treat this. And part of his speech, he said that he's treating this like they're treating like any other, you know, investigation. But this is not any other investigation. This was a coup attempt at our country that involved multiple politicians at very high levels across state lines. And they're, what I'm seeing is something that scares me, that they're going to move so slow that either there's going to be a very successful cover-up or we're going to run out of time.
The January 6th House Select Committee appears to be assembling a powerful case that, as President Donald Trump conducted a months-long effort to overturn the 2020 election results and ultimately instigated an assault on the U.S. Capitol to try to block the electoral vote count. Both the Democratic chairman and the Republican vice chair have indicated this could constitute criminal activity.
Do they think they have the criminal tools necessary to defend democracy in these instances? It may be that they're looking at this and saying, without an actual nexus to violence, what the president, the former president, and those around him did wasn't actually a crime. It's a threat to the Constitution. It's a betrayal of his oath of office. He should have been convicted by the Senate, but it may not be a federal crime under the criminal code. And if so, given that this is probably not the last coup we're going to face, and look, it may not be a crime because our criminal code doesn't have a lot of experience dealing with coups. We luckily haven't faced a lot of them in this country. But if the criminal code isn't sufficient for dealing with it, I would like to hear from the Justice Department that very fact, because as long as there's a Democratic Congress, they ought to be looking at changes, maybe not to address what happened on January 6, 2021 and the days leading up to it, but the next time Donald Trump or someone like him is on the ballot.
The facts might also meet the four corners of the federal anti-sedition statute, which covers those who would conspire to overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the government of the United States, or to levy war against them, or to oppose by force the authority thereof, or by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States. Conviction under this statute, however, requires proof that Trump intended the violent mob to achieve what his previous machinations, for example, strong-arming the Georgia Secretary of State, cajoling the Justice Department, did not. The
committee is now looking at whether Trump personally oversaw a criminal conspiracy that connects a White House plan, or the White House plan, to stop Joe Biden's certification from taking place on January 6th with the actual violent elements of the insurrection. And this all comes because the committee has a trove of evidence now from people like Meadows and other White House aides that suggest the White House read in Republican members of Congress into Trump's plan to have Pence effectively throw the election or refuse to certify various states for Joe Biden. And so what they are now looking at is if there's any connection between the political elements of that plan and the extremists who stormed the Capitol, because that would amount to a criminal conspiracy.
Investigators are looking into whether a range of crimes were committed, including whether there was wire fraud by Republicans who raised millions of dollars by promoting assertions that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, despite knowing the fucking claims were just not true. As investigators scrutinize these fundraising efforts, they are examining whether any campaign finance laws or regulations governing how nonprofits may spend their money were broken.
Just a few moments ago, we got a bit of breaking news on the committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. The New York Times reports the committee is weighing the possibility of recommending criminal charges against former President Donald Trump and others in his circle. Quote, according to people briefed on their efforts, investigators for the committee are looking into whether a range of crimes were committed, including two in particular. Whether there was wire fraud by Republicans who raised millions of dollars off assertions the election was stolen despite knowing the claims were not true, and whether Mr. Trump and his allies obstructed Congress by trying to stop the certification of electoral vote.
Representative Liz Cheney, vice chairwoman of the committee, has suggested that Trump could have violated, through action or inaction, a previously obscure obstruction charge that federal prosecutors have been using to pursue rioters at the Capitol on January 6th, the disruption of Congress's duty to certify the final stage of a presidential election.
It was established to create the most authoritative account of what happened on January 6th. Now, like in many congressional investigations, when they got under the hood and they took a look at what happened and they've looked at these troves of evidence, they've begun to consider whether that in the end they'll have to make a criminal referral. Vice Chairman Cheney really let the cat out of the bag on this the past few weeks, where she publicly read from the criminal code. And what we did is we went back and did some reporting to sort of look at the extent that the committee is looking at this issue, the two biggest issues, the ones that you laid out. And look, a criminal referral has no real legal weight, but what it would do is it would possibly change the pressure on Attorney General Garland. Whatever they have, whatever they know, it was enough for Liz Cheney to go out and say what she did, in these past few weeks, where she read from the criminal code.
Yes.
I think this committee wants to be taken seriously. They want this to appear like it's a bipartisan effort that is following the facts. Going out there and reading the criminal code is one of the more aggressive things that a congressional committee that has no criminal powers can do.
Jim and Benny G. Thompson appears to be in general agreement.
That it appeared to be a coordinated effort on the part of a number of people to undermine the election last November. The reason I say that is it could be people in the executive branch, could be people in the Department of Defense, some state characters, some nonprofits, and some very wealthy individuals who wanted to try to finance this undermining of our democracy. And what people saw on January 6th with their own eyes was not just something created at one moment. It was clearly what we believe, based on the information we've been able to gather, a coordinated activity on the part of a lot of people.
He's describing a conspiracy to overthrow the election, to prevent Congress from fulfilling its obligations, and to block the people's selected choice from assuming the presidency. I do worry that what we are placing all our hopes on the January 6th committee to save democracy, when, at the end of the day, that all they really are supposed to do is issue a report. We have been to this place time and again. I mean, go back, the Mueller report was a giant fucking nothing burger undermined by Bill Barr and twisted a fucking upside down and backwards and turned upside down by Donald Trump. Impeachment number one shuddered and failed, as did impeachment number two. Trump cannot be convicted on the margins of criminality. He is too powerful. The only way is to hang him with the receipts. Proof. Proof and more fucking proof is what's needed. And what did they do? And when did he do it? Those looking for salvation from the committee to deliver that smoking gun may find themselves really bitterly disappointed.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
And now for the main event. While urgent questions of criminality on January 6th burn in the mind of millions of Americans, the no-nonsense prosecutors in the New York Attorney General's office and the Manhattan District Attorney's office continue to push the ball forward, making a case against Donald Trump and his family members of operating a vast criminal organization for decades. My money is still on Tish James hanging Trump before the DOJ gets their hands on his fat neck. So does my next guest, Tristan Snell. The former New York Assistant Attorney General famously led the civil prosecution in the Trump University case for the state of New York against the Trump Organization. The 2013 case found the Trump Organization guilty, forcing them to pay out $25 million in restitution. Snell spent years scaling the walls of the Trump Organization, largely creating the playbook for defeating Donald Trump in court. Ultimately, he said, it's about the receipts, not the witnesses. To beat Trump, you need indisputable proof, a smoking gun, and that only comes from having the documents to prove it. Nowadays, Snell is the founder of Main Street Law and appears as a commentator on CNN and serves as a contributing writer for the Washington Post. His work as a lawyer and founder has been featured in a wide array of media outlets, from The New Yorker to The Atlantic to last week tonight on John Oliver. He joins me today on Mea Culpa as the nation sits at a precipice of a full-blown constitutional crisis. Whether or not our current attorney general has the fortitude to take down Donald Trump remains very much in question. Snell provided us with a roadmap for what to do next. So let's go now to that conversation. Okay, so Tristan, Roger Stone is taking the fifth today for his deposition before the January 6th committee. Now, Stone has already been sent to the slammer once, only to then be pardoned by our corrupt former idiot in chief. What do you believe his culpability to be in the January 6th insurrection?
All reports really indicate that he was really up to his eyeballs in all of this. He was at the Willard War Rooms at the Willard Hotel right across from the White House on the 4th and 5th leading up to January 6th. There is a now well-known set of photographs and videos of him the night before January 6th. Carousing with members of the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers. There's a lot there. So it's going to be very interesting to see. It's not surprising that he fled the fifth. I mean, that's a tell right there. It's, he's clearly in it. He's right in the middle of this. Otherwise, he wouldn't have fled the fifth.
Well, then again, that's a statement that Donald Trump once made, right? Only mobsters and guilty people plead the fifth, unless, of course, you're a Trump ally.
In which case, I guess it's okay. But it's going to be interesting to see how all of that transpires. I mean, I think we should expect to see a contempt motion coming from the January 6th committee and then from the full House. So Roger Stone will join the queue of people that are going to be waiting to get processed by the Justice Department and then by the court system in D.C. Unfortunately, the fact that the courts are so backed up all across the country and certainly in Washington has made that situation a lot more difficult. But, clearly there's something there.
Right. Except the problem with the backup in the court system is that it delays again.
Yeah.
And Trump doesn't even have to do anything this time. He doesn't have to file more bullshit, bogus motions in order to delay or to start bringing it now to an appellate court. Or now I want to say, he didn't even want to go to the appellate court. He wanted to go straight to the Supreme Court.
Right.
Because he knows the delay. And in his warped mind, he believes that he will win in the Supreme Court because he nominated three judges, you know, to the court. So therefore, he thinks he has an advantage.
Right.
Now, what I found interesting was really Roger Stone's comment. I will invoke my Fifth Amendment right not to answer their loaded questions. Right. I mean, this is just so typical of Roger Stone, who's just like a fucking wackadoo. Right. I will invoke my Fifth Amendment right not to answer their loaded questions. Not because I have done anything wrong. Typical Trump move, right? But because I recognize the whole thing as an elaborate trap. And then he goes on to say, I have said time and time again that I had no advanced knowledge of the events that took place at the Capitol on that day. Following to say, I don't like to see the criminalization of constitutionally protected political activity. I think it's a slippery slope. I'm not so sure that there's a constitutionally protected political activity known as an insurrection or a coup.
Right.
What am I missing here?
Right. No, I don't think you're missing anything. You know, at the end of the look, that is going to be their defense. Their defense is going to be to try to wrap themselves in the cloak of the First Amendment and hope that it somehow provides some kind of immunity for them. And, you know, there's a lot of First Amendment. This is a very well-developed area of law in terms of inciting action, carrying out action, planning action. And where is the line between speech and action? Where is the line between a peaceful assembly and a riot or an insurrection? I think that if you take a holistic view of this entire thing, it becomes pretty unmistakable that this was all very much planned and that this was something that they knew full well that what they were doing was baseless, meritless, that they weren't actually trying to achieve a valid political outcome based on an argument that could go either way, that this was a situation, that this was not just political activity. This was beyond that. They had no basis for any of their positions of voter fraud or election fraud, and that thereby what they were doing was trying to throw a monkey wrench into the constitutional process to elect and then inaugurate the next president of the United States based on a democratically held election. And the intent piece of that is going to be the key, because that'll also sort of help suss out whether or not these guys can actually get convicted. I think the key there is going to be the fact that one thing we do know is that there was that November 16th memo that was done by the Trump campaign to look into the Dominion claims and a whole bunch of the other claims of election fraud, finding them all to be false and baseless, that there was no merit in them. And that was distributed to, you know, a wide group of people. We don't know exactly whom yet. That's one of the things that I think we need to figure out, is what communications were made within the, really it looks like a conspiracy, within that conspiracy, who was apprised of the fact that there was no merit to any of these claims of election fraud? Because that creates intent. It wasn't just, oh, we thought it was election fraud and then we were trying to exercise our constitutionally protected rights. No. You knew that these things were baseless back in mid-November, and yet you kept on pursuing this. And I think one of the other big keys to this is, with Roger Stone in particular, is if it looks really like, for all the world, like he could have been one of the people who was a liaison to the guys that were really there to actually act violently and to act in disregard of the law that day, some of these paramilitary groups. We need to find out exactly what his connections were with those people, what his communications were with those people. You know, it certainly gives off the appearance that he was one of the links to the Proud Boys, to the Oath Keepers, to all of those guys. And they weren't the only ones who came there that day with an intent to do harm and to be violent, but they were certainly among the ringleaders of that effort. And we need to know how Stone was connected with all of that.
Well, I think that information has now been provided to the January 6th committee. What we saw over the last couple of days were two young individuals, yes, a male and a female, Dustin Stockton, as well as a young lady by the name of Jennifer Lawrence.
Yep.
Not the actress, Jennifer Lawrence.
Actress. Yep.
And what they, right, what they, what next thing we know, we're going to get, you know, lawsuits against us, you know, your whole, it's a defamation claim now. Not that Jennifer Lawrence. What's interesting is that the two of them, Stockton and Lawrence, obtained from, and this was, you know, protected rally, mm-hmm, for the Save America rally, right, which was then promoted as a Save America march. But their permit never permitted them to march. It was merely a rally in an area which is known as the Ellipse, yep, that's in the National Mall, which is, you know, just south of the White House. Somewhere around 2 weeks prior to the January 6th rally that was scheduled, the two of them were contacted by Trump campaign officials, including Eric Trump and Laura Trump, and they hijacked the rally. They said, we're going to take it from here. I find that to be interesting. Now, what these two individuals have now done is they provided to the January 6th committee a whole slew of emails, text messages, etc. What they've also ended up discussing with the January 6th committee are things like Mark Meadows being in communication with this mother-daughter act that actually took over, I forget what the last name of these folks are, but it was a mother-daughter team that basically ended up taking over with Eric and Laura Trump, mm-hmm, this rally.
Yeah.
And I say this because I think it's extremely significant. And I say it's significant because what they ultimately turned over were conversations that allude to the fact that this mother-daughter team had burner phones, but real burner phones, not the bullshit kind of burner phones that they put like in my allegation when they came in. They took, according to them, 14 burner phones. They weren't burner phones. They were my kids' old cell phones. Mm-hmm. I have two children, my wife's old one, including my old phones, which also included a Palm Pilot. I don't even know if you were born for a Palm Pilot.
Oh, I definitely was.
Right, that's the
one. I'm nowhere
that's
near
the one
that
you put the you have to put the antenna up, and it's uh-huh, not
oh,
powered by.
I used to have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as you log on to it and you upload it, the battery runs out, so yeah, you never really have a chance to use it. It was a complete nightmare. But my point is, we now know that there were communications going on between the outside, the insurrectionists,
yeah,
and Mark Meadows.
Yes.
And there's no doubt in my mind that Roger Stone is also named in many of these documents because that's who Roger is. Roger is somebody that likes to stir up the shit. And he, anytime that there's something that he can do which is dirty or treacherous, that's Roger Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it for Donald, right, his Führer, his supreme leader, he's all in.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the kicker there is, you know, as you were saying that, one of the things that kind of springs to mind for me is the narrative that may emerge is that there may have been somewhere in the middle of this thing being January 6th, somewhere down in the middle of this thing, if you dig deep enough, there may have been a peaceful, political rally that was going to happen in there. That may have been the intent of a number of these participants. However, if that rally was happening, here's what I'm thinking, is that it may have actually been, from the Trump perspective, a really great cover for what they actually wanted to do. In other words, they figured, great, there's already going to be a crowd of people there. Most of them are, you know, they're just coming to yell and scream and applaud. They're not there to do anything else, but we'll be able to then say that the entire day was peaceful, democratic political activity, as opposed to I guess what I'm trying to say is that they effectively hijacked and then infiltrated that event and then made sure that a bunch of the people that were there were actually not intending to be peaceful. They were intending to be violent and they were intending to go storm the Capitol. And that they were able to basically say it was a great cover. It was basically a ruse or almost like a Trojan horse to go up to the Capitol with a bunch of peaceful people in the mix to make it look like it was a peaceful event and to be able to say it was a peaceful event after. But they had then sort of sown the seeds of making sure that there were all these guys there that were ready with weapons, that were ready with that were wearing Kevlar vests, that had batons, that had hammers. They were ready to break glass. They were ready to attack people. They had bear spray. We still, by the way, always have to thank God that these people did not decide to just arm up. Because it would have been an absolute mess if these people had actually brought the guns that they probably have at home. January 6th would have been a very, very different and much more horrible day. But they were violent enough as it was. But I really, hearing you say this, it's like, look, I think that there may have been people who truly meant to just have a political rally that day and nothing more. And I think that they got hijacked and they got infiltrated. And based on what we already have seen with Stone having connections to these paramilitary groups, I think that he should be definitely high on the list of people of interest that the committee and then law enforcement folks need to be talking to. And we're also, I think we need to dig deeper as to what the connections were with those folks and people inside the Capitol, including members of Congress, because we still have all of the other things, which I'm guessing you might be getting to, with, why were Mike Pence and his team's cards, security cards turned off? He couldn't get around the Capitol that day. Why was Ayanna Pressley's panic button removed from her office that day? People were then tweeting out the location of exactly where the speaker was, including Lauren Boebert on that day, tweeting out exactly where Speaker Pelosi was. How did the insurrectionists get to the Capitol and instantly go to the, I think it's something in the neighborhood of 6 to 12 or something like that? There are only a handful of windows in that entire building, the Capitol, that were not reinforced. And the insurrectionists knew exactly which ones they were. Who placed the pipe bombs on January 5th? We still don't have an answer to that. There are a lot of other moving pieces to this that we need to get answers to. Roger Stone probably has some answers. And then there's a lot of other people that they need to go after. And the big picture here is that we're getting to a point now where I think all of these investigations are going to start jumping from the folks you're talking about, Stockton and Lawrence, the people who actually were there on the ground. And now we're jumping from the troops up to the suits. And the troops, a lot of why they've decided to cooperate, Stockton and Lawrence in particular, is because they feel betrayed. They feel like that the people that were there on the ground are now the ones getting punished and that the ringleaders are not getting any punishment. They're not actually facing any accountability. And that is a strong motivating factor for folks like them to say, no, I'm actually going to go cooperate with law enforcement. These are people that are not pro-government. I'm sure they are not happy to be talking to a Democratic majority committee. They're probably not happy to talk to law enforcement under a Democratic president if they end up getting interviewed by DOJ at some point, which I'm sure they will if they haven't been already. But they feel betrayed. They feel betrayed.
Yeah, except Tristan.
We're getting to an advanced stage now where this is going. It's starting to get a lot more advanced.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Yes, it is. And I just wanted to touch on that for a second because you're not going to get people like John Eastman, who also pled the fifth. You're not going to get Roger Stone. You're not going to get Steve Bannon to utter a single word. No matter what the penalty is, they're going to stick, you know, right next to Donald, thinking that he's going to save them. They're willing to, for whatever reason, you know, throw away their legacies, throw away their honor, throw away whatever position. Like I ended up doing, losing my law license, my business, my family's happiness, etc. You don't need their testimony is something that I talk so often about here on Mea Culpa. The documents speak for themselves.
Yes.
And the interesting thing to me, right, is that they now have a treasure trove of these documents that implicate Meadows from Don Trump Jr., right? You have Mark Meadows' book. That's his own words. It's everything about Meadows, who I can't help myself, but I have to continue with it. He is the dumbest asshole on the planet, right? He's the dumbest asshole on the Hill. You don't put out a book of your thoughts, your information, and then go and try to plead the fifth. And then we have, of course, again, Eastman and Bannon, and then you have Stone. You're not going to get a word uttered about this January 6th insurrection, not because, as Roger Stone said, because I'm innocent and this is a sham, this is a witch hunt. This is fact. But we now have the documents, the documentary evidence, in order to at least indict them. And let's make it rough for them and see how strong, you know, their internal fortitude, let's really put them to the test. Because, you know, what bothers me the most, and I want to get your opinion on this, what really bothered me the most is, after reading all about the text messages going back and forth, you know, to Meadows, whether from Don Jr. and everything that came out from Meadows' own providing of the documents to the January 6th committee. I compare this, which is a coup attempt, an insurrection on our Capitol, and then compare it to somebody like Reality Winner, who got what,
right,
6 years or something like right. that for one page that, you know, she put out there because as a whistleblower, she was concerned with the Russian collusion conversation that was going on and decided that she could not sit back and watch them lie about this. She gets 6 years for treason. Well, what the fuck is an insurrection then? Is that not treason against our Constitution? What am I missing?
Yeah, look, the thing is that, even if it isn't technically meeting the definition of treason, because there isn't an external enemy, although let's just put aside Russia for a second. We'll just put that away. We don't know where this could tie into foreign powers. Even if there isn't a foreign power in play, it's sedition. And that is a crime. And conspiracy to commit sedition is a crime. Sedition is the overthrow of the United States. It's just a fancy word for a coup or some other interference in the functioning of the government. And then there's a lot of other federal statutes on the books about basically effectively interfering with an election, interfering with a proper governmental procedure, interfering with the proper, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of them that I can't remember off the top of my head, but the people have been talking about for a while. And then conspiracy to commit any of those things. So there are federal statutes on the books that are implicated here for sure. So, you know, I think that part is there. You bring up indicting. Obviously, this gets into one of the favorite parlor games that everybody has been playing, which is, you know, is DOJ actually doing stuff behind the scenes and we don't know about it? Or is DOJ doing nothing yet? The surest way to get a bunch of anti-Trump people to start yelling at one another online is to take a strong position about how you feel about Merrick Garland, right? I have come to the conclusion that there's a couple of things. One is that I agree with your assessment that the documents are critical here, and the thing is, we're about 10 to 15 years into texting being kind of a ubiquitous activity that everybody engages in pretty much all the time. People text more than they call. They text more than they email. Things that used to be emails are now done as text, even for business purposes. The sheer quantity of text messages that people send is enormous, and all of that stuff is evidence. And you don't need the person's phone. All of that stuff is sitting there on cloud servers with Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile. So you can go get it. Now, if they used something that's encrypted on both ends, like WhatsApp or Signal or Telegram, and we know that Mark Meadows was using Signal to some degree, even on January 6th itself, then you potentially do need to get the person's device, but you don't need their testimony. And there's no such thing as a Fifth Amendment right to not hand over a device. Doesn't exist. The Fifth Amendment is for testimony. It does not say that you have a right not to incriminate yourself by what's on your phone. You got to hand over the phone. You got to hand over the computer. So the being able to get these materials from these people is that's a critical point. And then you bring up indicting. I think that gets into where is DOJ in all of this? I have come around to the idea that I think that DOJ is probably doing something way more than we think. It's probably way more than we think, but probably a little bit less than we hope. I think it's somewhere in between. I do think that things on their end are probably at a very advanced stage and that they are just doing an excellent job of keeping it under wraps. So somebody like Adam Schiff can go in front of the cameras and say that he doesn't believe Merrick Garland is doing anything. If I were Merrick Garland, I wouldn't tell Adam Schiff anything. I realize he's a senior member of the House and that he's on all these committees, but I wouldn't tell him anything because you'd be jeopardizing the integrity of your investigation. You don't tell anybody anything. And I've come around to the notion that here's one thing that's interesting. Merrick Garland, people have criticized him a whole lot. But what people don't necessarily know, and it doesn't get reported nearly enough, he was the guy who took down Timothy McVeigh. He prosecuted the Oklahoma City bombing. He was one of the people who prosecuted the Olympics bombing in Atlanta. These were a long time ago now, but for anybody who remembers those things, those were the two biggest domestic terrorism acts of the 90s and two of the biggest ones ever for domestic terrorism, certainly of recent times. And Merrick Garland prosecuted both of them. And he has a reputation for being someone who's very meticulous, very methodical, and he has managed to like cut you and you didn't even know it. He's not a flashy guy. He's not going to get in front of the cameras and grandstand. He's not Rudy Giuliani. You know, Giuliani's style as a prosecutor was very out front, very in the papers all the time, always in front of the cameras, made people do camera perp walks. He practically invented those. Merrick Garland's like the exact opposite. So I have come around to feel that there's a lot more going on at DOJ than anybody realizes. And that if members of Congress or members of the media or commentators believe that Garland is not doing anything, that's exactly how Garland's trying to play it. I think he's fooling everybody. I think they're doing way, way more than we realize. And they might not even be telling the guys on the Hill what they're doing. They're not telling members of Congress. It may be that none of them know what's going on. Nancy Pelosi may have no clue what's going on in the Department of Justice right now.
Let's hope that you're right.
We'll have to see. So you bring up indictments. You know, I think that, look, are they going to happen tomorrow? No. Are they going to happen in the next 3 months? No. Could we start seeing some serious indictments of ringleaders of January 6th sometime in 2022? Yes. I do believe that we're going to see that. These things move slower than we like, but I think they're moving faster than we realize.
So let me ask you this then. It appears now that part of the January 6th committee strategy is to use the massive volume of information it has gathered to feed the media a steady stream of stories and control the narrative of actually what happened and frame the story. I'm curious, as you're watching things unfold, including the subpoenaing today of Phil Waldron, the creator of that 38-page coup PowerPoint, what's the larger narrative that they're walking towards? Because I believe that the ultimate goal is to walk Trump into a criminal prosecution. What's your thoughts here?
I think you're right. I think that they are. I think it's beginning to snowball. It's beginning to build up steam. You know, people have criticized them for having all of the hearings behind closed doors, but that's typical for this kind of thing. You're not going to hold the first hearings in public. You're going to hold them behind closed doors. These are depositions. They're not normally public at first. They're sworn. They're on the record. And they want to get all the facts first. They've already been hinting that there are going to be public hearings in the coming year, in the new year. And I think that that's when we'll really start to see some of this. We got a taste of it the other night when they had two different nights. We had the committee session and then we had the full House session on the Mark Meadows contempt action. And we started to see, especially from Liz Cheney, was really the most visible person doing this. Now we started to see. We found out about some of Mark Meadows' texts. That's just the beginning. We're going to start seeing more and more public proceedings from the committee, where they will, in fact, they're going to be doing this to try to start to tell the story. It is to the House's job here is going to be more about. It's about evidence gathering, and then it's going to be about beginning to craft the narrative for the public more than anything, and then queuing it up for things that can then be referred over to DOJ, not just for contempt, but for indictments on these much more serious federal charges around conspiracy and sedition. Other people that we can think of here that are going to be key here are Jeffrey Clark. Jeffrey Clark also pleading the fifth, at least for now. We'll have to see what he ends up doing. He's up to his eyeballs in this, and it's very well documented. And two of his colleagues already basically testified against it, including his boss, Jeffrey Rosen. So it's going to be very, very hard for Clark to escape anything. There's a whole bunch of different wings of this and a bunch of things that we're going to see. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that we're going to see a lot more that will start to drive the media narrative more. And I think it's already changed a lot just within the last week in terms of the media has been reporting on this a lot more than they had been. And I think it's going to start to pick up steam more. that is also what happened during Watergate. It took a long time to actually get to a point where you really started to see it take over the news. People think about Watergate now and think, oh, well, they must have caught him pretty quickly and, you know, oh, and then he resigned. No. It took more than 2 years to get Nixon to resign. And it was a full year almost, about 330 days, before you actually had any public hearings on the matter. And the next day, they actually appointed a special prosecutor. Now, there's something that hasn't been done at the DOJ level that a lot of people have been clamoring for, and it may end up happening. They may end up appointing a special prosecutor at some point. Obviously, that would be a very significant development. I would not be surprised if we see that in the next 3-4 months, that we'll actually see a special prosecutor. It'll give potentially another layer of insulation of the process, because above all, they're going to want to make sure that this doesn't look political. They want to make sure that this is a law enforcement matter. This is not a political matter. This is a law enforcement matter. And they're going to do everything they can to make sure that it is treated the same way and that they are taking down a conspiracy the same way that they did with regard to some of these other domestic terror attacks in the past, and the same way that they have for mafia cases, and the same way that they have for other types of conspiracy cases.
So, Tristan, I'm hoping that you could unpack something that I found a rather interesting tweet that you wrote on January 14th. And I'm going to quote. I'm sure you know exactly the interesting tweet that I'm referring to. And I'm going to quote it now. The deeper game here, if the January 6th investigation goes truly nuclear, Mitch McConnell may in fact stand down as the Senate votes to ban from office the House representatives who participated in the insurrection under the 14th Amendment. Mitch won't go down with the GOP ship. If you do me the favor, explain to my listeners what you meant here, and if this is why he's been praising the work of the committee in the recent days.
Yeah, that's what prompted my tweet there. Yeah, this was the other day, December 14th. I do believe that it's possible that, look, Mitch McConnell is a wily old fox. He is definitely a survivor. You know, he used to actually be much more of a moderate Republican back in the 80s and 90s. He was not anywhere near this conservative. If you go back and sort of go read the Wikipedia entry on Mitch McConnell, it's fascinating. But he has shifted as the GOP has shifted. But here's the thing, is that go back, rewind to January 6th, January 7th, when they actually then were certifying the Electoral College results. You know, you obviously had a very large number, a shockingly large number of the GOP reps in the House voted to not certify the election results. Whereas in the Senate, it was way, way fewer. McConnell held a block of more moderate, more than maybe establishment GOP folks to actually vote to certify the results. I don't believe that McConnell is going to let the Senate GOP block or caucus get dragged into the mud the way that is happening on the House side, where it's clear you had a significant amount of participation in the events of January 6th in one form or another. We don't know quite yet if it was truly criminal, but certainly some involvement, I'll just put it for now, by quite a few representatives of the House on the GOP side. Now, where is this going? We have the possibility of some of these people getting criminally prosecuted. I believe that if that does occur and you actually start to see indictments and then convictions or guilty pleas from some of these members of Congress who participated, truly participated and criminally participated in January 6th. I'll give an example. If they were giving out information about the whereabouts of certain members of Congress that were being targeted that day, if they were involved with any other security breaches or giving away, the location of the non-reinforced windows, giving tours to the insurrectionists so that they were able to case the building on January 4th and January 5th, Once all of these things can get criminally proven, would you then start to see activation of the disqualification clause, which is in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which was passed after the Civil War, to say that anybody who has sworn an oath to defend the Constitution, by the way, that is that's all members of the House, Senate, a lot of high-ranking executive office officials, it includes judges, it includes all members of the military. It's that famous oath that has the line in it, you know, against all enemies, that they'll defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That is critical here. They swore an oath to defend the Constitution against domestic enemies. If they swore that oath of office and then participated in or gave aid or comfort to an insurrection, they can be banned from all office, federal, state, of any kind, by a majority of both houses of Congress, by a simple majority. There is some potential legal interpretation in there that we don't need to get into right now. That ban can get lifted by a two-thirds majority of both houses. But this disqualification clause is something that we all need to keep an eye on, because it's one thing to say, oh, some of these people are going to be going through the criminal justice system potentially. It's another thing entirely to then say that they could actually be banned from office for life. Because astoundingly, it is possible that some of these people could actually get reelected even if they're criminally prosecuted. But if there's a majority in the two houses of Congress to ban them from office under the disqualification clause, then they're out and they're not going to be able to run for Congress again. They can't go run for state legislature in their home states. They can't go run for governor. They can't go run for president. They can't go run for anything. They're out for good, unless they get a two-thirds majority to let them back into being eligible for office again. And I think the big question there is, especially with this, with the persistence of the filibuster, is Mitch McConnell going to allow that to happen? There's a Democratic House majority right now. Question whether it'll still be there by January 2023, but right now it's there. So if you actually had one of these Republican House reps who participated in the insurrection, would they get a majority of Democrats in the House to say that they should be banned from office? Yes, I think you get it. But then the question is, would the Republicans even allow that vote to happen, or would they filibuster it? And I think that they're, so my tweet was basically to say, Mitch McConnell may be like, I'm not gonna save these guys. I'm not gonna stick my neck out to save somebody like a Lauren Boebert or a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Paul Gosar that may have participated in this. If it turns out that they are criminally prosecuted and they're potentially being banned from office, Mitch McConnell would, I think, potentially let that go to a vote. He would make sure that enough Republicans voted for cloture, that there would be no filibuster. And I think Mitch McConnell would personally be potentially willing to vote to ban some of those people from office if it turns out that they're criminally liable. I do, because I think that McConnell cares more about his institutional position more than anything else. And if they really see that some of these people truly did participate in the insurrection, I think he is going to stand aside, or you know, he could do sort of a halfway measure where he lets the vote happen, but then he votes not to ban them, which is what he did with the impeachment. He allowed the second impeachment to go forward last winter, but then he didn't end up voting in favor of impeaching Donald Trump or convicting Donald Trump. But I actually think that Mitch McConnell could actually let these people twist in the wind rather than using the Senate to defend them.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not.
The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
So let's go back, because we were talking before also about the phone records, that you don't have a Fifth Amendment right to your phone records, your computer records, emails, text messages, etc. It's almost 1 year now since the insurrection, and there has not yet been a subpoena for Kevin McCarthy's phone records. The same holds true with Josh Hawley as well as Lindsey Graham. First off, what relevant information do you think that they have to provide? I think it's got to be a shit ton, right? And why do you think that it hasn't happened yet? I mean, this is the part that I think frustrates America, at least Democrats. It's frustrating the fact that it's a year. In a year, we expect our representatives, those that are sitting on these committees, to at least act expeditiously. It does not take a year to get Lindsey Graham, Josh Hawley, Kevin McCarthy's phone records. Fuck, they got mine in like a day. So I know that it's possible to do it. Why not? Why haven't they done it yet?
It's politics. You know, the difference between your situation and this situation is that they weren't worried about political repercussions and going after you, right? The fact that the situation is so fraught politically, I think, is the reason why we haven't seen those happen yet. I tweeted about this the other day too. I actually believe that the reason why they haven't gone after those guys yet is because it's a heavier lift politically, is the way I put it. I believe that. So let's just be clear. I believe that they probably already have a lot of records on those three folks, on McCarthy, on Hawley, and Graham, from the phone companies. I think they already have plenty of data on those three guys from the phone companies. They haven't subpoenaed those three people individually yet. I think they're going to work up to that point. I think what you're going to see probably is they're going to get some really good text messages from those guys to one of the people who have already been implicated, and then they're going to be ready to share those text messages publicly so that they basically build a public case for, this is why we're actually going to be going after the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy. This is why we're still going to start going after members of the Senate. And I think that we're getting there. That's my take. And again, the same answer for why it's taken so long. It's politics. That's the reason why it took them. It's frustrating. Don't get me wrong. I'm not apologizing for them. I'm just pointing out that I believe that that's why it's been taking so long. It took them 6-7 months just to get the damn committee, you know, just to actually appoint a committee. And I think part of the reason why some of it was the sort of like politically sensitive nature of then the fact that they're going after the recently left Republican president, and the fact that they're going after members of Congress who were implicated in all of this. That's part of why it's politically fraught. And then I think the other reason that's political is because they didn't want that to be the first thing that happened in Biden's new term. I think that's also why we didn't see any action on it in the first 6 months of the year, because they wanted to have get Biden's legislative program built and into Congress. And I think that the administration was also up to its eyeballs dealing with COVID.
Okay, so allow me then to expand on that question for you.
Yeah.
Because the larger question is now that they are going after the phone records of the Sedition Seven. That's Boebert, Biggs, Cawthorn, my all-time favorite, Matt fucking Gaetz, right? Gohmert, another idiot and a half, Paul Gosar, Jerkoff, right? Marjorie Taylor Greene. There's nothing else anybody can say about that piece of shit. Perry. Do you think that this is where we truly find out what actually went on January 6th and who was involved all the way up and then all the way down?
Yeah, I think we're going to look. And again, remember, I believe that they actually already have a lot of those records from the phone companies. And I think they have social media records from Facebook and from Google and from a lot of these other. Because remember, they did those subpoenas earlier on. They subpoenaed the third parties first. They went after all those custodians of records back in August and September, I want to say. Most of those companies said that they were going to cooperate. So I think they already have their hands on a bunch of these records, on a bunch of these members of Congress. I think that the reason why they're going after them individually is because probably some of the third party tech companies didn't necessarily give everything right away. Also because they want to see if there's anything that was missed. And then also because I believe that some of these communications were done on encrypted forms of communication where there's end-to-end encryption. You know, if you've got end-to-end encryption, then arguably, God only knows, put it this way, for one thing, just because a platform says it's end-to-end encrypted doesn't mean it is, one. Two, if it truly is end-to-end encrypted, then what that means is that the platform, say Signal, arguably has no way to produce the texts that somebody like Mark Meadows sent on Signal on January 6th. Thereby, you actually have to get those texts from one of the two people who sent the texts, right?
Okay, so but Tristan, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but Tristan. Let's just use Mark Meadows since you brought that out as the example here.
Yeah.
There are statements made between Don Jr. and Mark Meadows, between Mark Meadows and other of these insurrectionists, the rally organizers, etc. Yet don't need 50 different aspects of this case in order to indict this fucking asshole. All you need to do is take one. Take two if you really want to waste your time. I think that the fact that they're intending on subpoenaing 300 people, or they already have, that they intend on speaking now to hundreds of witnesses, for what? I say this all the time on mea culpa, and it gives me agita. You don't need to kill 100 people to be a murderer. All you need is to get them on one. There's more than enough here to show, just between Don Jr. and Meadows, that Trump knew about it, that Meadows knew what was going. And that should be more than enough to create an indictment. Now, if you want to find some other stuff, sure. The stuff that's encrypted, right, on both sides, okay, you're not going to get it. But I guarantee you that they already have at least a dozen, a half a dozen, just ironclad information that would be more than enough to bring to a grand jury and to indict, because we already know that grand juries is a one-sided event. It's not as if right. The other side is there defending themselves. Fucking bring the indictment, then bring them in, and put the pressure already onto it. But I want to ask you something, because it goes back to this whole thing about indictments and legal fees. It was recently revealed that the RNC agreed to pay $1.6 million worth of Trump's legal bills. Now, you know I have an issue with all of this, but I'm curious what that arrangement says to you. First off, why would they need to pay the bills if he's a billionaire? And secondly, are they that tied to Trump that they need to bail him out of legal trouble? Because I saw Ronna Romney McDaniels, look, I've spent time with her when I was the RNC vice chair of the finance committee. She's a total supporter. I mean, she, in her mind, Donald Trump walks on water. Right. I mean, what is this really saying to you? That the RNC, which is supposed to be for all Republicans, right, throughout the entire country, is using this money instead. They're dumping $1.6 million into defending an insurrection.
I mean, for one thing, if I were a Republican donor, I'm not, but if I were a Republican donor, I would, and wasn't super fond of Trump, and even if I were fairly supportive of him, I would be pissed. Because let's just be clear, let's unpack it just a little bit more. This has nothing to do with, even with January 6th, this is nothing to do with, you know, look, Trump is going to get investigated, I think ultimately indicted for his role just merely with the wing of the January 6th conspiracy revolving around DOJ. His efforts to try to get Jeffrey Clark to basically weaponize DOJ, and get them to falsely declare that there had been election fraud. I think that that's probably going to result in something criminal for Trump. But that we're not even about that. This is about his private business, cases where he's facing both criminal and civil investigations here in New York from the Manhattan DA's office and from the New York Attorney General's office regarding possible tax and lender fraud here with regard to the Trump Organization. Those are the legal bills that we're talking about that now the RNC has paid $1.6 million of. That is unprecedented. Nobody has been able to point to any situation in which this has happened before. One of the two major political parties has actually paid anybody's personal, you know, business legal bills, criminal defense legal bills. That was one of the, you know, points I made on Twitter really quickly was that, you know, if you're a real billionaire, you don't need a handout to pay your legal bills. You don't need somebody, you know, giving you $1.6 million to cover your legal bills if you're supposedly a billionaire. So it kind of puts the lie to the notion that, you know, Trump is this very successful business guy, especially these days. But then there's also the fact that, yeah, to answer your other question, the RNC is that enthrall to Trump. There's just no way around it. He is their meal ticket right now. He is the main reason that they're able to raise money. If there is a divorce between Trump and the RNC, the RNC would cease to be able to raise most of the money that it can raise. And apparently it was buried in some of the news reports from this yesterday, but there was a little note that jumped out at me, which is that Ronna McDaniel has had to plead with the president not to form a third party. So I think that the Republicans, the RNC is, the better way to put it is they're scared of what will happen if Trump turns on them. I think they're very scared that Trump is just going to wake up one day and write one of his little, you know, email statements and declare that he's starting his own political party and that he's going to run for president as an independent and that he's going to leave the Republican Party. I think that is their nightmare scenario. Because they know that it would completely doom them to complete irrelevance. If Trump were to leave the GOP right now, it actually could mean the end of the GOP. It might be dead. Like it could potentially kill it as an institution.
I'm not so sure about that. I don't think he holds really, that big of a sway.
I think he
over
does.
He has. He has.
I think
a,
he does
nah,
right
I disagree.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there are plenty of people that will turn around and say, you know what, if they can find somebody else who can fill the spot and actually open up people's eyes to the grift that's been going on. Do I think it would hurt the RNC? Absolutely. Do I think it would be the destruction of the party? I don't think so. I think the party is way bigger than Trump. But as you know, with the DA...
I think they're afraid that it could be the destruction of the party. I think that they're afraid...
Why stop the gravy train?
Right,
Tristan, why stop the gravy train?
Right, they don't want to stop the gravy train. It's been good for them. They raise money every time he opens his mouth, and they want to continue that. So, yeah, they're going to do whatever they can to keep him happy. But it is pretty pathetic to watch.
Yeah, it's grotesque. I want to switch gears for a second because you know that I'm very active with both the DA and the AG's case here in New York. Provided them probably close to 15 different sessions of meeting and so on. Now, I want to talk about the Trump Organization case. First off, is the testimony given to the grand jury from the other day from longtime Trump accountant Donald Bender, who's with Mazur? This guy has been Trump's accountant for at least longer than I was there. That's decades. And obviously, he's privy to all the shenanigans that goes on there between himself, between Alan Weisselberg, with Donald. I mean, that's how it used to work, that after everybody put together whatever information they needed to do, it would always be just Trump, Weisselberg, and Donald Bender, you know, prior to, of course, the creation of his tax returns. What do you think that Donald Bender knows? And what kind of a deal do you think he got in order to talk?
So under New York law, as you may know, if you testify before a grand jury, you get immunity as to that testimony. It's the sort of king for a day or queen for a day immunity. Prosecutors, especially at the sort of higher level, your more prestigious prosecutors' offices, are not in the business of putting witnesses before a grand jury without that witness being helpful. They're not just going to put someone before the grand jury if it's not somebody that's going to help the case. So my read on this, if you read between the lines, is that Donald Bender testifying before the grand jury the other day doesn't mean he's cooperating full stop, but it means he's being helpful at least in part. And that the Manhattan DA's office was convinced enough that what he was saying was helpful that they wanted to put him in front of the grand jury. And there's the implication that then he is now immune with regard to the testimony that he gave before that grand jury. I do believe this is a very significant development. It did not get a whole lot of press attention. It's another brick in the wall, but it's a pretty big brick. Bender's been there since at least the 90s. Certainly for the time period that these prosecutions are gunning after runs from around anywhere from 2003 to 2006 to pretty much the present day, and certainly up to the point that Trump became president. So Bender was involved that entire time. So he knows where all the bodies are buried, so to speak, except the bodies here are numbers. Right. And the question is, like, when they came up with these widely different valuations of properties, how was that decision made? And that bears on intent. So for the criminal case, that intent is critical because that's how you're actually going to find whether or not there was a crime there. You're going to need to be able to prove intent and you're going to have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a high hurdle. However, they have a really good start to clear that hurdle by things like 40 Wall Street, a 3,300% disparity between the tax value that they stated and the value that they stated to lenders. 3,300%. That's no accident. That's not Donald Bender, you know, missed a number. That's not like somebody messed up the Excel spreadsheet. That was a deliberate act. There's no way that wasn't intentional. Obviously, if you can get testimony that reinforces that fact, that it's like, yes, I provided whatever the numbers were and we met and blah, blah, blah. If he was actually testifying as to what happened in meetings with Weisselberg and Trump, I mean, that's really the nightmare scenario for Trump. and for Weisselberg and for the Trump Organization. So that's one. And then two, we can get to later, which is the civil case with the AG, which is a totally different situation in which the entire setup is even more favorable to the government.
So let me just correct you on one thing. What they're really looking at is not going back into the 1990s, the early 2000s. They're looking, based off the documentation that I provided to the House Oversight mm-hmm. Committee, and because they have those documents as well. Mm-hmm. We're really talking about 2012, 13, 14, and 15. I mean, that's even at a time that he claimed that his home, his triplex, was 33,000 square feet with a value of $100 million, and then bounced it up even higher than that. In fact, mm-hmm. the apartment is 11,000 square feet. So how the hell Donald doesn't know the fact that the footprint's not 33,000 feet, which of course he's not only the developer, he's the resident. So it's just, honestly, it's comical. I would love to be up there prosecuting, because I would make it into a Saturday Night Live, you know, episode in a skit. You know, what do you mean it's not 33,000? It's not. But, you know, Tristan, as we wind down the hour, I have just two additional questions for you.
Sure.
Trump's deposition before the New York Attorney General is upcoming.
Yep.
Now, I've read some of his depositions, and I can tell you they're almost comical. Because he thinks circular, he lies like a fucking rug, and it's like you could start in one direction and you end up with another direction. Ultimately, him telling you that the valuation of the building is what I say it is, right? That's mm-hmm. really not how you'd make a determination of a value. But there's talk that if he appears, that he's likely going to have to plead the fifth, which would be, you know, the king of all irony. Right. I'm curious what you know about his testimony and what you think that the AG is looking to get out of this.
Yeah. So real quick, one thing with the civil case is that there you do not have to prove intent. You just have to be able to prove that there is a deception. You don't have to prove that it was an intentional deception. That's number one. Number two is that because it's a civil case, it is a preponderance of the evidence. Basically, like, is the evidence 51% versus 49% in favor of liability? As opposed to beyond a reasonable doubt, which is like, you know, pick a number, but it's like supposed to be like, you know, 99% certain that the person had criminal liability. So the standard is way, way more favorable to the government in that case, in a civil prosecution there. Trump already has, you know, a huge uphill battle here to be able to prevail in this civil case, given the disparity in the values between what was claimed to tax assessors versus what was claimed to lenders. So Trump's deposition, yes, he is an absolute nightmare in depositions. If you're any Trump's lawyers, it's just like you're literally just up at night with cold sweats, you know, fearing what's about to happen, because he's going to go in there and he's just going to go around and around in circles. And yeah, they could actually get him to be like, you know, basically what you said, like, you know, the property value is what I say it is. He could actually say that. If he pleads the fifth, here's the interesting thing. You can't plead the fifth in a civil case the same way you can in a criminal case. If you mm-hmm. plead the fifth in a civil case, it does protect you from that testimony being used against you in the criminal case. That is true. But the civil court is allowed to take the inference that whatever you were declining to answer, you are liable for. That the answer was bad, that you had something to hide. So if Trump pleads the fifth during that civil deposition, he is really, really going to put some nails in the coffin in terms of that civil case. Now, the civil case will not result in him going to jail, civil, not criminal. However, I've been beating the drum on this, it could result in a nine-figure payment to the state of New York. And some of that could go to the lenders. Some of that will go to the state as penalties, and others will go to the state for back taxes that should have been paid in the first place.
Which brings me to my last question.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Which brings me to my last question to you. Because you wrote early, and I agree with you 100%. I, too, have been beating the shit out of the drum on this. Yep. You wrote early how the AG's case will likely destroy the Trump organization. Explain how, you know, and why this will happen, and then what happens to Trump. And, of course, again, we're talking about financially.
Right. So, yeah, this is, I've talked about it being kind of a financial wrecking ball. I think it'll really damage it and reshape it, if not potentially, it has the potential to destroy it entirely. Here's why. Based on the other reports that we have from some really good journalism, we know that he's got a lot of debts coming due. He's got lines of credit that are going to get called within the next year and in the coming years, where he's going to owe hundreds of millions of dollars in loan repayments to a bunch of these big banks in Europe and elsewhere around the world. Because Wall Street banks have been blackballing him for decades. So he already is going to have a bit of a cash crunch. We know that his properties have been generating revenue. So when you see reports saying Trump made $1 billion while he was president, yes, he made that in gross revenue. Net, he probably lost money. Because even the properties that he claimed were doing really, really well, like the Doral Golf Club in Florida or the new hotel in D.C., that he's got there near the White House. Those properties actually lost money during that time. I think that if you then add a nine-figure payday to the state of New York on top of that, he could find himself in a position where he actually has to sell some of the properties in order to be able to pay for everything. And that could be ruinous for him. It could really, you could find him selling 40 Wall Street, selling the Trump International building here in New York, selling some of the golf clubs, because he's going to have to come up with money to pay off all of these things, that the creditors as well as the government.
Yeah, but I want to bring something, I want to add something to that comment. It's not just New York that he's going to owe. It's going to also be the federal government, IRS, and so on, which
taxes.
Is definitely going to be an additional nine figures on there. And then here's even a bigger problem. What ultimately happens is when you sell the property, let's talk about 40 Wall Street. If he sells 40 Wall Street, he has a negative basis in that property. So if he gets $300 million to it, $150 of that is going straight off the bat to Uncle Sam,
right,
as a
that's
capital
right.
gain.
That's right.
So
yes.
that's the big issue here.
Yep. It sets a bunch of dominoes in motion, and we don't know where it'll end. It could end in another bankruptcy. So we'll see.
Yep. Well, Tristan, let me turn around and say thank you for joining me again on Mea Culpa. It's always a great conversation. It's always an insightful conversation. Of course, I end up getting a little bit more, heated up than everybody else, all my guests. One day I should go on somebody else's show where I'm not getting heated up. But I want to thank you, and I want to wish you a very happy new year to you and your family as well. So please stay safe, and I hope to see you back here on Mea Culpa soon. And now for today's Mea Culpa. In thinking about Merrick Garland's address before the January 6th anniversary, I am worried that the DOJ will never prosecute Donald Trump. I did not hear any sense of urgency, despite the fact that Garland stated that the attack by design interfered with a fundamental element of American democracy, the peaceful transfer of power from one administration to the next. Well, why did the attack happen? Simple. Trump's nonstop fucking lies from Election Day in November of 2020 on, including his summoning supporters to Washington on January 6th for a wild time and his urging them on that tragic morning to stop the steal. The January 6th attack simply wouldn't have happened if Trump hadn't engaged in that conduct, but had instead accepted the fact that he lost the fucking election. Every day that we don't pursue action against the true plotters of this day is another moment where they're able to obscure and muddle the truth of what actually happened. The most relentless of these voices is Chief MAGA propagandist Tucker Carlson, who on the eve of January 6th told his millions of viewers that January 6th barely rates as a footnote and really not a lot happened that day if you think about it. He called the event just a riot, maybe just barely. This memory holding of January 6th allows the GOP to claim that they are being unfairly maligned for actions beyond their control. Congressional Republicans almost uniformly avoided participating in events at the Capitol on Thursday commemorating the January 6th attack. They were nowhere to be found on the House or the Senate floor. That left Representatives Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene, the fucking lunatic fringe of the GOP, as the headliners of their party's only event on Capitol Hill on Thursday commemorating the anniversary of the riot. And this, my friend, speaks volumes. They once again elevated unproven conspiracy theories about the origin of the assault that sought to deflect blame from Trump, such as one suggesting that federal agents stoked the violence against Congress. And here is where the rubber meets the road. Should the GOP retake the majority later this year, Green, Gates, and the lunatic fringe of the GOP who protect Trump at all costs will be ushered into power and rewarded with all manner of high-ranking posts in a new GOP Congress. This fucking frightens me beyond the pale, and it should frighten you too. Let's hope we see justice before the clock runs out. And thanks for listening. Mea Culpa is brought to you by Audio Up, Midas Touch, and LSJ Media. And it's written and produced by Jimmy Jelinek. Executive producers are Jared Gustat, Jimmy Jelinek, myself, Michael Cohen, and Phil Alberstadt. Our editor is Lisa Orkin. It may be a new day politically, but nowadays the landscape is more confusing than ever. Donald Trump may have lost the battle for the presidency, but in many ways, Trumpism is winning the war on the state and local level. Mea Culpa is here to help guide you through the wilderness and keep you informed. And let's face it, we all want Trump, Rudy, and the rest of these seditious traitors to see justice. And folks, it's coming. So stay tuned as I guide you through the twists and turns of the criminal process that will ultimately see them behind bars. Mea culpa. Nothing but the truth.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.